Chapter 20. Sidene. Rand kept them moving through the night, allowing only a brief stop at dawn to rest the horses, and to allow Loyal rest. With the Horn of Valir and its gold and silver chest occupying his saddle, the Ogier walked or trotted ahead of his big horse, never complaining, never slowing them. Sometime during the night they had crossed the border of Cairhien.
"I want to see it again," Selene said as they halted.
She dismounted and strode to Loyal's horse. Their shadows, long and thin, pointed west from the sun just peeking over the horizon.
"Bring it down for me, Alantin."
Loyal began to undo the straps.
"The Horn of Valir."
"No," Rand said, climbing down from Red's back. "Loyal, no." The Ogier looked from Rand to Selene, his ears twitching doubtfully, but he took his hands away.
"I want to see the horn," Selene demanded.
Rand was sure she was no older than he, but at that moment she suddenly seemed as old and as cold as the mountains, and more regal than Queen Morgaze at her haughtiest.
"I think we should keep the dagger shielded," Rand said. "For all I know, looking at it may be as bad as touching it. Let it stay where it is until I can put it in Matt's hands. He can take it to the Aes Sedai."
"And what price will they demand for that healing?"
"But he hasn't any choice."
He felt a little guilty over feeling relief that he, at least, was through with Aes Sedai.
"I am done with them, one way or another."
"The dagger. All you seem to care about is that dagger. I told you to be rid of it. The Horn of Valir, Rand."
"No." She came to him, a sway in her walk that made him feel as if he had something caught in his throat.
"All I want is to see it in the light of day. I won't even touch it. You hold it. It would be something for me to remember, you holding the Horn of Valir in your hands."
She took his hands as she said it. Her touch made his skin tingle and his mouth go dry.
Something to remember when she had gone.
He could close the dagger up again as soon as the horn was out of the chest. It would be something to hold the horn in his hands where he could see it in the light. He wished he knew more of the prophecies of the dragon. The one time he had heard a merchant's guard telling a part of it, back in Emmons Field, Nynaeve had broken a broom across the man's shoulders. None of the little he had heard mentioned the Horn of Valir.
"Aes Sedai, trying to make me do what they want."
Selene was still gazing intently into his eyes, her face so young and beautiful that he wanted to kiss her despite what he was thinking. He had never seen an Aes Sedai act the way she did, and she looked young, not ageless.
"A girl my age couldn't be Aes Sedai, but..."
"Selene," he said softly,
"are you an Aes Sedai?"
"Aes Sedai?" She almost spat, flinging his hands away.
"Aes Sedai? Always you hurl that at me."
She took a deep breath and smoothed her dress, as if gathering herself.
"I am what and who I am, and I am no Aes Sedai."
And she wrapped herself in a silent coldness that made even the morning sun seem chill. Loyal and Huron bore it all with as good a grace as they could manage, trying to make conversation and hiding their embarrassment when she froze them with a look. They rode on. By the time they made camp that night beside a mountain stream that provided fish for their supper, Selene seemed to have regained some of her temper, chatting with the Ogier about books, speaking kindly to Huron. She barely spoke to Rand, though, unless he spoke first, either that evening or the following day as they rode through mountains that reared on either side of them like huge, jagged gray walls, ever climbing. But whenever he looked at her, she was watching him and smiling. Sometimes it was the sort of smile that made him smile back, sometimes the sort that made him clear his throat and blush at his own thoughts, and sometimes the mysterious, knowing smile that Egwene sometimes wore. It was a kind of smile that always put his back up. But at least it was a smile.
"She can't be Aes Sedai."
The way began to slope downwards, and with the promise of twilight in the air, Kinslayer's dagger at last gave way to hills, rolling and round, with more brush than trees, more thickets than forest. There was no road, just a dirt track, such as might be used by a few carts now and again. Fields carved some of the hills into terraces, fields full of crops but empty of people at this hour. None of the scattered farm buildings lay close enough to the path they rode for Rand to make out more than that they were all made of stone. When he saw the village ahead, lights already twinkled in a few windows against the coming of night.
"We'll sleep in beds tonight," he said. "That I will enjoy, Lord Rand,"
Huron laughed. Loyal nodded agreement.
"A village inn?" Celine sniffed. "Dirty, no doubt, and full of unwashed men swilling ale. Why can't we sleep under the stars again? I find I enjoy sleeping under the stars."
"You would not enjoy it if Fane caught up with us while we slept," Rand said. "Him and those Trollocs. He's coming after me, Celine. After the horn, too, but it is me he can find. Why do you think I've kept such a close watch these past nights?"
"If Fane catches us, you will deal with him."
Her voice was coolly confident.
"And there could be dark friends in the village, too."
"But even if they know who we are, they can't do much with the rest of the villagers around. Not unless you think everyone in the village is a dark friend."
"And if they discover you carry the horn? Whether you want greatness or not, even farmers dream of it."
"She is right, Rand," Loyal said. "I fear even farmers might want to take it."
"Unroll your blanket, Loyal, and throw it over the chest. Keep it covered." Loyal complied, and Rand nodded. It was obvious there was a box or chest beneath the Ogier's striped blanket, but nothing suggested it was more than a travel chest. "My lady's chest of clothes," Rand said with a grin and a bow. Celine met his sally with silence and an unreadable look. After a moment, they started on again. Almost immediately, off to Rand's left, a glimmer from the setting sun reflected from something on the ground. Something large. Something very large by the light it threw up. Curious, he turned his horse that way.
"My lord," Huron said, "the village?"
"I just want to see this first," Rand said.
"It's brighter than sunlight on water. What can it be?"
His eyes on the reflection, he was surprised when Red suddenly stopped. On the point of urging the bay on, he realized that they stood on the edge of a clay precipice, above a huge excavation. Most of the hill had been dug away to a depth of easily 100 paces. Certainly more than one hill had vanished, and maybe some farmers' fields, for the hole was at least 10 times as wide as it was deep. The far side appeared to have been packed hard to a ramp. There were men on the bottom, 12 of them, getting a fire started. Down there, night was already descending. Here and there among them, armor turned the light, and swords swung at their sides. He hardly glanced at them. Out of the clay at the bottom of the pit slanted a gigantic stone hand holding a crystal sphere. And it was this that shone with the last sunlight. Rand gaped at the size of it. A smooth ball. He was sure not so much as a scratch marred its surface, at least 20 paces through. Some distance away from the hand, a stone face in proportion had been uncovered. A bearded man's face, it thrust out of the soil with the dignity of vast years. The broad features seemed to hold wisdom and knowledge. Unsummoned, the void formed, whole and complete in an instant. Sidene glowing, beckoning. So intent was he on the face and the hand that he did not realize what had happened. He had once heard a ship captain speak of a giant hand holding a huge crystal sphere. Bale Doman had claimed it stuck out of a hill on the island of Tremulking.
"This is dangerous," Celine said. "Come away, Rand."
"I believe I can find a way down there," he said absently. Sidene sang to him. The huge ball seemed to glow white with the light of the sinking sun. It seemed to him that in the depths of the crystal, light swirled and danced in time to the song of Sidene. He wondered why the men below did not appear to notice. Celine rode close and took hold of his arm.
"Please, Rand, you must come away."
He looked at her hand, puzzled, then followed her arm up to her face. She seemed genuinely worried, perhaps even afraid.
"If this bank doesn't give way beneath our horses and break our necks with the fall, those men are guards, and no one puts guards on something they wish every passerby to examine. What good will it do to avoid Fane if some lord's guards arrest you? Come away."
Suddenly, a drifting, distant thought, he realized that the void surrounded him. Sidene sang, and the sphere pulsed. Even without looking, he could feel it. and the thought came that if he sang the song Sidene sang, that huge stone face would open its mouth and sing with him. With him and with Sidene, all one.
"Please, Rand," Selene said. "I will go to the village with you. I won't mention the horn again. Only come away."
He released the void, and it did not go. Sidene crooned, and the light in the sphere beat like a heart. Like his heart. Loyal, Huron, Selene, they all stared at him, but they seemed oblivious to the glorious blaze from the crystal. He tried to push the void away. It held like granite. He floated in an emptiness as hard as stone. The song of Sidene, the song of the sphere. He could feel them quivering along his bones. Grimly, he refused to give in, reached deep inside himself. "I will not."
"Rand."
He did not know whose voice it was. Reached for the core of who he was, the core of what he was.
"Will not."
"Rand."
The song filled him, filled the emptiness. Touched stone, hot from a pitiless sun, cold from a merciless night.
"Not."
Light filled him, blinded him.
"Till shade is gone," he mumbled. "Till water is gone."
Power filled him. He was one with the sphere.
"Into the shadow with teeth bared."
The power was his. The power was his.
"To spit in sight blinder's eye."
Power to break the world. "On the last day." It came out as a shout, and the void was gone. Red shied at his cry. Clay crumbled under the stallion's hoof, spilling into the pit. The big bay went to his knees. Rand leaned forward, gathering the reins, and Red scrambled to safety away from the edge. They were all staring at him, he saw. Selene, Loyal, Huron, all of them.
"What happened?"
"The void." He touched his forehead. The void had not gone when he released it, and the glow of Sidene had grown stronger, and he could not remember any more.
"Sidene." He felt cold. "Did I do something?"
He frowned, trying to remember.
"Did I say something?"
"You just sat there stiff as a statue," Loyal said, "mumbling to yourself no matter what anyone said. I couldn't make out what you were saying. Not until you shouted day loud enough to wake the dead and nearly put your horse over the edge. Are you ill? You're acting more and more oddly every day."
"I am not sick," Rand said harshly, then softened it. "I'm all right, Loyal."
Selene watched him warily. From the pit came the sound of men calling, the words indistinguishable.
"Lord Rand," Huron said, "I think those guards have finally noticed us. If they know way up this side, they could be here any minute."
"Yes," Selene said. "Let us leave here quickly."
Rand glanced at the excavation, then away again, quickly. The great crystal held nothing except reflected light from the evening sun, but he did not want to look at it. He could almost remember something about the sphere.
"I don't see any reason to wait for them. We didn't do anything. Let's find an inn."
He turned Red toward the village, and they soon left the pit and shouting guards behind. As many villages did, Tremoncine covered the top of a hill, but like the farms they had passed, this hill had been sculpted into terraces with stone retaining walls. Square stone houses sat on precise plots of land with exact gardens behind, along a few straight streets that crossed each other at right angles. The necessity of a curve to streets going around the hill seemed begrudged. Yet the people seemed open and friendly enough, pausing to nod to each other as they hurried about their last chores before nightfall. They were a short folk, none taller than Rand's shoulder, and few as tall as Huron, with dark eyes and pale, narrow faces, and dressed in dark clothes, except for a few who wore slashes of color across the chest. Smells of cooking, oddly spiced to Rand's nose, filled the air, though a handful of goodwives still hung over their doors to talk. The doors were split so the top could stand open while the bottom was closed. The people eyed the newcomers curiously, with no sign of hostility. A few stared a moment longer at Loyal, and Ogier walking alongside a horse as big as a Durin stallion, but never more than a moment longer. The inn, at the very top of the hill, was stone like every other building in the town and plainly marked by a painted sign hanging over the wide doors. The Nine Rings. Rand swung down with a smile and tied Red to one of the hitching posts out front. The Nine Rings had been one of his favorite adventure stories when he was a boy. He supposed it still was. Celine still seemed uneasy when he helped her dismount.
"Are you all right?" he asked. "I didn't frighten you back there, did I? Red would never fall over a cliff with me." He wondered what had really happened.
"You terrified me," she said in a tight voice, "and I do not frighten easily. You could have killed yourself, killed—"
She smoothed her dress.
"Ride with me, tonight, now. Bring the horn, and I will stay by your side forever. Think of it, me by your side, and the Horn of Valyr in your hands. And that will only be the beginning, I promise. What more could you ask for?"
Rand shook his head.
"I can't, Celine. The horn—"
He looked around. A man looked out his window across the way, then twitched the curtains closed. Evening darkened the street, and there was no one else in sight now except Loyal and Hurin.
"The horn is not mine. I told you that."
She turned her back on him, her white cloak walling him off as effectively as bricks. Chapter 21. The Nine Rings. Rand expected the common room to be empty since it was nearly supper time, but half a dozen men crowded one table, dicing among their jacks of ale, and another sat by himself over a meal. Though the dicers carried no weapons in sight and wore no armor, only plain coats and breeches of dark blue, something about the way they held themselves told Rand they were soldiers. His eyes went to the solitary man. An officer with the tops of his high boots turned down and his sword propped against the table beside his chair. A single slash of red and one of yellow crossed the chest of the officer's blue coat from shoulder to shoulder. And the front of his head was shaved, though his black hair hung long in the back. The soldier's hair was clipped short, as if it had all been cut under the same bowl. All seven turned to look as Rand and the others came in. The innkeeper was a lean woman with a long nose and graying hair, but her wrinkles seemed part of her ready smile more than anything else. She came bustling up, wiping her hands on a spotless white apron.
"Good evening to you."
Her quick eyes took in Rand's gold-embroidered red coat and Celine's fine white dress.
"My lord, my lady, I am Maglin Madwin, my lord. Be welcome to the Nine Rings. And an Ogier. Not many of your kind come this way, friend Ogier. Would you be up from steading Tsofu, then?"
Loyal managed an awkward half-bow under the weight of the chest.
"No, good innkeeper. I come the other way, from the Borderlands."
"From the Borderlands, you say? Well. And you, my lord, forgive me for asking, but you've not the look of the Borderlands, if you don't mind my saying it."
"I'm from the Two Rivers, Mistress Madwin, in Andor."
He glanced at Celine. She did not seem to admit he existed. Her level look barely admitted that the room existed, or anyone in it.
"The Lady Celine is from Kyrian, from the capital, and I am from Andor."
"As you say, my lord."
Mistress Madwin's glance flickered to Rand's sword. The bronze herons were plain on the scabbard and hilt. She frowned slightly, but her face was clear again in a blink.
"You will be wanting a meal for yourself and your beautiful lady and your followers. And rooms, I expect. I'll have your horses seen to. I've a good table for you right this way, and pork with yellow peppers on the fire. Would you be hunting the Horn of Valyr then, my lord? You and your lady?"
In the act of following her, Rand almost stumbled.
"No. Why would you think we were?" "No offense, my lord. We've had two through here already, all polished to look like heroes, not to suggest anything of the kind about you, my lord, in the last month. Not many strangers come here, except traders up from the capital to buy oats and barley. I'd not suppose the hunt has left Ilion yet, but maybe some don't think they really need the blessing, and they'll get a jump on the others by missing it."
"We are not hunting the horn, mistress."
Rand did not glance at the bundle in Loyal's arms. The blanket with its colorful stripes hung bunched over the Ogier's thick arms and disguised the chest well.
"We surely are not.
We are on our way to the capital. As you say, my lord. Forgive me for asking, but is your lady well?
Celine looked at her and spoke for the first time.
I am quite well.
Her voice left a chill in the air that stifled talk for a moment.
You're not Carrion and Mistress Madwin,
Huron said suddenly. Burdened down with their saddlebags and Rand's bundle, he looked like a walking baggage cart.
Pardon, but you don't sound it.
Mistress Madwin's eyebrows rose, and she shot a glance at Rand, then grinned.
I should have known you'd let your man speak freely, but I've grown used to.
Her glance darted toward the officer, who had gone back to his own meal.
Light, no, I'm not Carrionin. But for my sins, I married one. 23 years I lived with him, and when he died on me, the light shine on him, I was all ready to go back to Lugard. But he had the last laugh, he did. He left me the inn and his brother the money, when I was sure it would be the other way round. Tricksome and scheming, Baron was, like every man I've ever known. Carrionin most of all. Will you be seated, my lord, my lady?
The innkeeper gave a surprised blink when Huron sat at table with them. And Ogier, it seemed, was one thing, but Huron was clearly a servant in her eyes. With another quick look at Rand, she bustled off to the kitchens, and soon serving girls came with their meal, giggling and staring at the lord and the lady, and the Ogier, till Mistress Madwin chased them back to their work. At first Rand stared at his food doubtfully. The pork was cut in small bits mixed with long strips of yellow peppers and peas, and a number of vegetables and things he did not recognize, all in some sort of clear, thick sauce. It smelled sweet and sharp, both at the same time. Celine only picked at hers, but Loyal was eating with a will. Huron grinned at Rand over his fork.
They spice their food oddly, Carrion and do, Lord Rand. But for all that, it's not bad.
It won't bite you, Rand, Loyal added.
Rand took a hesitant mouthful and almost gasped. It tasted just as it smelled, sweet and sharp together, the pork crisp on the outside and tender inside, a dozen different flavors, spices, all blending and contrasting. It tasted like nothing he had ever put in his mouth before. It tasted wonderful. He cleaned his plate, and when Mistress Madwin returned with the serving girls to clear away, he nearly asked for more the way Loyal did. Celine's was still half full, and she motioned curtly for one of the girls to take it.
A pleasure, friend Ogier.
The innkeeper smiled.
It takes a lot to fill up one of you. Katrin, bring another helping and be quick.
One of the girls darted away. Mistress Madwin turned a smile on Rand.
My lord, I had a man here who played the bittern, but he married a girl off one of the farms and she has him strumming reins behind a plow now. I couldn't help noticing what looks like a flute case sticking out of your man's bundle. Since my musician's gone, would you let your man favor us with a little music?
Huron looked embarrassed.
He doesn't play, Rand explained. I do.
The woman blinked. It appeared lords did not play the flute, at least not in Carrion.
I withdraw the request, my lord. Light's own truth, I meant no offense, I assure you. I'd never ask one such as yourself to be playing in a common room.
Rand hesitated only a moment. It had been too long since he had practiced the flute rather than the sword, and the coins in his pouch would not last forever. Once he was rid of his fancy clothes, once he turned the horn over to Ingtar and the dagger over to Matt, he would need the flute to earn his supper again while he searched for somewhere safe from Aes Sedai.
And safe from myself? Something did happen back there. What?
I don't mind, he said. Huron, hand me the case. Just slide it out. There was no need to show a gleeman's cloak. Enough unspoken questions shown in Mistress Madwin's dark eyes as it was. Worked gold chased with silver, the instrument looked the sort a lord might play, if lords anywhere played the flute. The heron branded on his right palm did not interfere with his fingering. Celine's salves had worked so well, he hardly thought of the brand unless he saw it. Yet it was in his thoughts now, and unconsciously he began to play Heron on the Wing. Huron bobbed his head to the tune, and Loyal beat time on the table with a thick finger. Celine looked at Rand as if wondering what he was.
I'm not a lord, m'lady. I'm a shepherd, and I play the flute in common rooms.
But the soldiers turned from their talk to listen, and the officer closed the wooden cover of the book he had begun reading. Celine's steady gaze struck a stubborn spark inside Rand. Determinedly, he avoided any song that might fit in a palace or a lord's manor. He played Only One Bucket of Water and The Old Two Rivers Leaf, Old Jack's Up a Tree, and Goodman Prickett's Pipe. With the last, the six soldiers began to sing in raucous tones, though not the words Rand knew. We rode down to River Irelel, just to see the Tyran come. We stood along the river bank with the rising of the sun. Their horses black the summer plain, their banners black the sky. But we stood our ground on the banks of River Irelel. Oh, we stood our ground. Yes, we stood our ground. Stood our ground along the river in the morning. It was not the first time that Rand had discovered a tune had different words and different names in different lands, sometimes even in villages in the same land. He played along with them until they let the words die away, slapping each other's shoulders and making rude comments on one another's singing. When Rand lowered the flute, the officer rose and made a sharp gesture. The soldiers fell silent in mid-laugh, scraped back their chairs to bow to the officer with hand on breast, and to Rand, and left without a backwards look. The officer came to Rand's table and bowed, hand to heart. The shave in front of his head looked as if he had dusted it with white powder.
"Grace favor you, my lord. I trust they did not bother you, singing as they did. They are a common sort, but they meant no insult, I assure you. I am Aldrin Caldwin, my lord. Captain in His Majesty's service, the light illumine him."
His eyes slid over Rand's sword. Rand had the feeling Caldwin had noticed the herons as soon as he came in. "They didn't insult me." The officer's accent reminded him of Moraine's, precise and every word pronounced to its full. "Did she really let me go? I wonder if she's following me or waiting for me." "Sit down, Captain, please." Caldwin drew a chair from another table. "Tell me, Captain, if you don't mind. Have you seen any other strangers recently? A lady, short and slender, and a fighting man with blue eyes. He's tall, and sometimes he wears his sword on his back."
"I have seen no strangers at all," he said, lowering himself stiffly to his seat. "Saving yourself and your lady, my lord. Few of the nobility ever come here."
His eyes flicked toward Loyal with a minute frown. Huron he ignored for a servant. "It was only a thought."
"Under the light, my lord, I mean no disrespect, but may I hear your name? We have so few strangers here that I find I wish to know everyone."
Rand gave it. He claimed no title, but the officer seemed not to notice. And said, as he had to the innkeeper, "From the Two Rivers in Andor."
"A wondrous place, I have heard, Lord Rand. I may call you so? And fine men, the Andermen. No Kyrianin has ever worn a blademaster's sword so young as you. I met some Andermen once, the captain general of the Queen's Guards among them. I do not remember his name, an embarrassment. Perhaps you could favor me with it?"
Rand was conscious of the serving girls in the background, beginning to clean and sweep. Caldwin seemed only to be making conversation, but there was a probing quality to his look.
"Garth Bryn." "Of course. Young to hold so much responsibility."
Rand kept his voice level. "Garth Bryn has enough gray in his hair to be your father, Captain."
"Forgive me, my Lord Rand. I meant to say that he came to it young."
Caldwin turned to Celine, and for a moment he only stared. He shook himself, finally, as if coming out of a trance.
"Forgive me for looking at you so, milady, and forgive me for speaking so, but grace has surely favored you. Will you give me a name to put to such beauty?"
Just as Celine opened her mouth, one of the serving girls let out a cry and dropped a lamp she was taking down from a shelf. The oil splattered and caught in a pool of flame on the floor. Rand leaped to his feet along with the others at the table, but before any of them could move, Mistress Madwin appeared, and she and the girl smothered the flames with their aprons.
"I have told you to be careful, Catrin,"
the innkeeper said, shaking her now smutty apron under the girl's nose.
"You'll be burning the inn down and yourself in it."
The girl seemed on the point of tears.
I was being careful, mistress, but I had such a twinge in my arm.
Mistress Madwin threw up her hands.
You always have some excuse, and you still break more dishes than all the rest. It's all right. Clean it up and don't burn yourself.
The innkeeper turned to Rand and the others, all still standing around the table.
I hope none of you take this amiss. The girl really won't burn down the inn. She's hard on the dishes when she starts mooning over some young fellow, but she's never mishandled a lamp before.
I would like to be shown to my room. I do not feel well after all.
Celine spoke in careful tones, as though uncertain of her stomach. But despite that, she looked and sounded as cool and calm as ever.
The journey and the fire.
The innkeeper clucked like a mother hen.
Of course, my lady. I have a fine room for you and your lord. Shall I fetch Mother Cara Duane? She has a fine hand with soothing herbs.
Celine's voice sharpened.
No, and I wish a room by myself.
Mistress Madwin glanced at Rand, but the next moment she was bowing Celine solicitously toward the stairs.
As you wish, my lady. Lyden, fetch the lady's things like a good girl now.
One of the serving girls ran to take Celine's saddlebags from Huron, and the women disappeared upstairs, Celine stiff-backed and silent. Caldwin stared after them until they were gone, then shook himself again. He waited until Rand had seated himself before taking his chair again.
Forgive me, my lord Rand, for staring so at your lady, but grace has surely favored you in her. I mean no insult.
None taken, Rand said. He wondered if every man felt the way he did when they looked at Celine. As I was riding to the village, Captain, I saw a huge sphere. Crystal, it seemed. What is it? The Cariennan's eyes sharpened.
It is part of the statue, my Lord Rand, he said slowly.
His gaze flickered toward Loyal. For an instant, he seemed to be considering something new.
Statue?
I saw a hand and a face, too. It must be huge.
It is, my Lord Rand, and old,
Caldwin paused.
From the age of legends, so I am told.
Rand felt a chill. The age of legends, when use of the one power was everywhere, if the stories could be believed.
What happened there? I know there was something.
The age of legends, Loyal said. Yes, it must be. No one has done work so vast since. A great piece of work to dig that up, Captain.
Huron sat silently, as if he not only was not listening, but was not there at all. Caldwin nodded reluctantly.
I have 500 laborers in camp beyond the diggings, and even so it will be past summer's end before we have it clear. They are men from the foregate. Half my work is to keep them digging, and the other half is to keep them out of this village. Foregaters have a fondness for drinking and carousing, you understand. And these people lead quiet lives.
His tone said his sympathies were all with the villagers. Rand nodded. He had no interest in foregaters, whoever they were. What will you do with it? The captain hesitated, but Rand only looked back at him until he spoke.
Galdrian himself has ordered that it be taken to the capital.
Loyal blinked.
A very great piece of work, that. I am not sure how something that big could be moved so far.
His Majesty has ordered it, Caldwin said sharply. It will be set up outside the city, a monument to the greatness of Cariennan and of House Riotan. Ogier are not the only ones who know how to move stone.
Loyal looked abashed, and the captain visibly calmed himself.
Your pardon, friend Ogier. I spoke in haste and rudely.
He still sounded a little gruff.
Will you be staying in Tremoncien long, my Lord Rand?
We leave in the morning, Rand said.
We are going to Cariennan. As it happens, I am sending some of my men back to the city tomorrow. I must rotate them. They grow stale after too long watching men swing picks and shovels. You will not mind if they ride in your company?
He put it as a question, but as if acceptance were a foregone conclusion. Mistress Madwin appeared on the stairs, and he rose.
If you will excuse me, my Lord Rand, I must be up early. Until the morning, then, grace favor you.
He bowed to Rand, nodded to Loyal, and left. As the doors closed behind the Kyrianon, the innkeeper came to the table.
I have your lady settled, my lord, and I've good rooms prepared for you and your man, and you, friend Ogier.
She paused, studying Rand.
Forgive me if I overstep, my lord, but I think I can speak freely to a lord who lets his man speak up. If I'm wrong, well, I mean no insult.
For 23 years, Baron Madwin and I were arguing when we weren't kissing, so to speak. That's by way of saying I have some experience. Right now, you're thinking your lady never wants to see you again, but it's my way of thinking that if you tap on her door tonight, she'll be taking you in. Smile and say it was your fault, whether it was or not.
Rand cleared his throat and hoped his face was not turning red.
Light. Egwene would kill me if she knew I'd even thought of it, and Celine would kill me if I did it.
Or would she?
That did make his cheeks burn. I thank you for your suggestion, Mistress Madwin. The rooms?
He avoided looking at the blanket-covered chest by Loyal's chair. They did not dare leave it without someone awake and guarding it.
We three will all sleep in the same room.
The innkeeper looked startled, but she recovered quickly.
As you wish, my lord. This way, if you please.
Rand followed her up the stairs. Loyal carried the chest under its blanket. The stairs groaned under the weight of him and the chest together, but the innkeeper seemed to think it was just an Ogier's bulk, and Huron still carried all the saddlebags and the bundled cloak with the harp and flute. Mistress Madwin had a third bed brought in and hastily assembled and made up. One of the beds already there stretched nearly from wall to wall in length, and had obviously been meant for Loyal from the start. There was barely room to walk between the beds. As soon as the innkeeper was gone, Rand turned to the others. Loyal had pushed the still-covered chest under his bed and was trying the mattress. Huron was setting out the saddlebags.
Do either of you know why that captain was so suspicious of us?
He was, I'm sure of it.
He shook his head.
I almost think he thought we might steal that statue the way he was talking.
Deus de Mar, Lord Rand, Huron said. The great game. The game of houses, some call it. This Caldwin thinks you must be doing something to your advantage or you wouldn't be here. And whatever you're doing might be to his disadvantage, so he has to be careful.
Rand shook his head.
The great game? What game?
It isn't a game at all, Rand, Loyal said from his bed.
He had pulled a book from his pocket, but it lay unopened on his chest.
I don't know much about it. Ogier don't do such things, but I have heard of it. The nobles and the noble houses maneuver for advantage. They do things they think will help them, or hurt an enemy, or both. Usually it's all done in secrecy, or if not, they try to make it seem as if they're doing something other than what they are.
He gave one tufted ear a puzzled scratch.
Even knowing what it is, I don't understand it. Elder Haman always said it would take a greater mind than his to understand the things humans do, and I don't know many as intelligent as Elder Haman. You humans are odd.
Huron gave the Ogier a slanted look, but he said,
He has the right of Deus de Mar, Lord Rand. Kyrianon play it more than most, though all southerners do.
These soldiers in the morning, Rand said, are they part of Caldwin playing this great game? We can't afford to get mixed in anything like that.
There was no need to mention the horn. They were all too aware of its presence.
Loyal shook his head.
I don't know, Rand. He's human, so it could mean anything.
Huron?
I don't know either.
Huron sounded as worried as the Ogier looked.
He could be doing just what he said, or... That's the way of the game of houses. You never know. I spent most of my time at Carrion in the Foregate, Lord Rand, and I don't know much about Kyrianon nobles, but, well, Deus de Mar can be dangerous anywhere, but especially in Kyrian, I've heard.
He brightened suddenly.
The Lady Celine, Lord Rand. She'll know better than me or the Builder. You can ask her in the morning.
But in the morning, Celine was gone. When Rand went down to the common room, Mistress Madwin handed him a sealed parchment.
If you'll forgive me, my lord, you shouldn't have listened to me. You should have tapped on your lady's door.
Rand waited until she went away before he broke the white wax seal. The wax had been impressed with a crescent moon and stars.
I must leave you for a time. There are too many people here, and I do not like Caldwin. I will await you in Carrion. Never think that I am too far from you. You will be in my thoughts always, as I know that I am in yours.
It was not signed, but that elegant flowing script had the look of Celine. He folded it carefully and put it in his pocket before going outside, where Huron had the horses waiting. Captain Caldwin was there too, with another younger officer and 50 mounted soldiers crowding the street. The two officers were bareheaded, but wore steel-blacked gauntlets and gold-worked breastplates strapped over their blue coats. A short staff was fastened to the harness of each officer's back, bearing a small, stiff blue banner above his head. Caldwin's banner bore a single white star, while the younger man's was crossed by two white bars. They were a sharp contrast to the soldiers in their plain armor and helmets that looked like bells with metal cut away to expose their faces. Caldwin bowed as Rand came out of the inn.
Good morning to you, my Lord Rand. This is Elric Kane Tavalin, who will command your escort, if I may call it that.
The other officer bowed. His head was shaved, as Caldwin's was. He did not speak.
An escort will be welcome, Captain, Rand said, managing to sound at ease.
Fane would not try anything against 50 soldiers, but Rand wished he could be certain they were only an escort. The captain eyed Loyal, on his way to his horse with a blanket-covered chest.
A heavy burden, Ogier.
Loyal almost missed a step.
I never like to be far from my books, Captain.
His wide mouth flashed teeth in a self-conscious grin, and he hurried to strap the chest onto his saddle. Caldwin looked around, frowning.
Your lady is not down yet, and her fine animal is not here.
She left already, Rand told him. She had to go on to Carrion quickly during the night. Caldwin's eyebrows lifted.
During the night? But my men... Forgive me, my Lord Rand.
He drew the young officer aside, whispering furiously.
He had the inn watched, Lord Rand, Huron whispered. The Lady Celine must have gotten past them unseen somehow.
Rand climbed to Red's saddle with a grimace. If there had been any chance Caldwin did not suspect them of something, it seemed Celine had finished it.
Too many people, she says, he muttered.
There'll be more people by far in Carrion.
You said something, my lord.
Rand looked up as Tavalin joined him, mounted on a tall, dust-colored gelding. Huron was in his saddle, too, and Loyal stood beside his big horse's head. The soldiers were formed up in ranks. Caldwin was nowhere to be seen.
Nothing is happening the way I expect, Rand said.
Tavalin gave him a brief smile, hardly more than a twitch of his lips.
Shall we ride, my lord?
The strange procession headed for the hard-packed road that led to the city of Carrion.
Chapter 22. Watchers. Nothing is happening as I expect, Moiraine muttered, not expecting an answer from Lan. The long, polished table before her was littered with books and papers, scrolls and manuscripts, many of them dusty from long storage and tattered with age, some only fragments. The room seemed almost made of books and manuscripts, filling shelves except where there were doors or windows or the fireplace. The chairs were high-backed and well-padded, but half of them and most of the small tables held books, and some had books and scrolls tucked under them. Only the clutter in front of Moiraine was hers, though. She rose and moved to the window, peered into the night towards the lights of the village not far off. No danger of pursuit here. No one would expect her to come here. Clear my head and begin again, she thought. That is all there is to do. None of the villagers had any suspicion that the two elderly sisters living in this snug house were Aes Sedai. One did not suspect such things in a small place like Tifan's Well, a farming community deep in the grassy plains of Arafel. The villagers came to the sisters for advice on their problems and cures for their ills and valued them as women blessed by the light, but no more. Adelius and Van Deen had gone into voluntary retreat together so long ago that few even in the White Tower remembered they still lived. With the one equally aged warder who remained to them, they lived quietly, still intending to write the history of the world since the breaking, and as much as they could include of before, one day. In the meantime, there was so much information to gather, so many puzzles to solve. Their house was the perfect place for Moiraine to find the information she needed, except that it was not there. Movement caught her eye and she turned. Lan was lounging against the yellow brick fireplace, as imperturbable as a boulder. "Do you remember the first time we met, Lan?" She was watching for some sign, or she would not have seen the quick twitch of his eyebrow. It was not often she caught him by surprise. This was a subject neither of them ever mentioned. Nearly 20 years ago, she had told him, with all the stiff pride of one still young enough to be called young, she recalled, that she would never speak of it again, and expected the same silence of him. "I remember," was all he said. "And still no apology, I suppose. You threw me into a pond." She did not smile, though she could feel amusement at it now. "Every stitch I had was soaked, and in what you bordermen call new spring, I nearly froze. I recall I built a fire, too, and hung blankets so you could warm yourself in privacy." He poked at the burning logs and returned the fire tool to its hook. Even summer nights were cool in the borderlands. "I also recall that while I slept that night, you dumped half the pond on me. It would have saved a great deal of shivering on both our parts if you had simply told me you were Aes Sedai, rather than demonstrating it. Rather than trying to separate me from my sword. Not a good way to introduce yourself to a border man, even for a young woman." "I was young, and alone, and you were as large then as you are now, and your fierceness more open. I did not want you to know I was Aes Sedai. It seemed to me at the time you might answer my questions more freely if you did not know." She fell silent for a moment, thinking of the years since that meeting. It had been good to find a companion to join her in her quest. "In the weeks that followed, did you suspect that I would ask you to bond to me? I decided you were the one in the first day." "I never guessed," he said dryly. "I was too busy wondering if I could escort you to Chachin and keep a whole skin. A different surprise you had for me every night. The ants, I recall, in particular. I don't think I had one good night's sleep that whole ride." She permitted herself a small smile, remembering. "I was young," she repeated. "And does your bond chafe after all these years? You are not a man to wear a leash easily, even so light a one as mine." It was a stinging comment. She meant it to be so. "No." His voice was cool, but he took up the fire tool again and gave the blaze a fierce poking it did not need. Sparks cascaded up the chimney. "I chose freely, knowing what it entailed." The iron rod clattered back onto its hook, and he made a formal bow. "Honored to serve, Moiraine Aes Sedai. It has been and will be so always." Moiraine sniffed. "Your humility, Lan Gaideen, has always been more arrogance than most kings could manage with their armies at their backs. From the first day I met you, it has been so." "Why all this talk of days past, Moiraine?" For the 100th time, or so it seemed to her, she considered the words to use. "Before we left Tarvalen, I made arrangements, should anything happen to me, for your bond to pass to another." He stared at her, silent. "When you feel my death, you will find yourself compelled to seek her out immediately. I do not want you to be surprised by it." "Compelled," he breathed softly, angrily. "Never once have you used my bond to compel me. I thought you more than disapproved of that. Had I left this thing undone, you would be free of the bond at my death, and not even my strongest command to you would hold. I will not allow you to die in a useless attempt to avenge me, and I will not allow you to return to your equally useless private war in the Blight. The war we fight is the same war, if you could only see it so, and I will see that you fight it to some purpose. Neither vengeance nor an unburied death in the Blight will do."
"And do you foresee your death coming soon?"
His voice was quiet, his face expressionless,
both like stone in a dead winter blizzard. It was a manner she had seen in him many times, usually when he was on the point of violence. "Have you planned something without me that will see you dead?" "I'm suddenly glad there is no pond in this room," she murmured, then raised her hands when he stiffened, offended at her light tone. "I see my death in every day, as you do. How could I not, with the task we have followed these years? Now, with everything coming to a head, I must see it as even more possible." For a moment he studied his hands, large and square. "I had never thought," he said slowly, "that I might not be the first of us to die. Somehow, even at the worst, it always seemed..." Abruptly he scrubbed his hands against each other. "If there is a chance I might be given like a pet lapdog, I would at least like to know to whom I am being given." "I have never seen you as a pet," Moiraine said sharply, "and neither does Mirel." "Mirel," he grimaced. "Yes, she would have to be green or else some slip of a girl just raised to full sisterhood." "If Mirel can keep her 3 Gaidin in line, perhaps she has a chance to manage you. Though she would like to keep you, I know, she has promised to pass your bond to another when she finds one who suits you better." "So, not a pet, but a parcel. Mirel is to be a caretaker. Moiraine, not even the Greens treat their warders so. No Aes Sedai has passed her warder's bond to another in 400 years, but you intend to do it to me not once but twice." "It is done, and I will not undo it." "The light blind me, if I'm to be passed from hand to hand, do you at least have some idea in whose hand I will end?" "What I do is for your own good, and perhaps it may be for another's as well. It may be that Mirel will find a slip of a girl just raised to sisterhood. Was that not what you said? Who needs a warder hardened in battle and wise in the ways of the world? A slip of a girl who may need someone who will throw her into a pond. You have much to offer, Lan, and to see it wasted in an unmarked grave, or left to the ravens, when it could go to a woman who needs it, would be worse than the sin of which the white cloaks prate. Yes, I think she will have need of you." Lan's eyes widened slightly. For him it was the same as another man gasping in shocked surmise. She had seldom seen him so off balance. He opened his mouth twice before he spoke. "And who do you have in mind for this?" She cut him off. "Are you sure the bond does not chafe, Lan Gaidin? Do you realize for the first time only now the strength of that bond, the depth of it? You could end with some budding white, all logic and no heart, or with a young brown who sees you as nothing more than a pair of hands to carry her books and sketches. I can hand you where I will, like a parcel or a lapdog, and you can do no more than go. Are you sure it does not chafe?" "Is that what this has been for?" he grated. His eyes burned like blue fire and his mouth twisted. Anger, for the first time ever that she had seen, open anger etched his face. "Has all this talk been a test? A test to see if you could make my bond rub after all this time? From the day I pledged to you, I have ridden where you said ride, even when I thought it foolish, even when I had reason to ride another way. Never did you need my bond to force me. On your word, I have watched you walk into danger and kept my hands at my sides when I wanted nothing more than to outsword and carve a path to safety for you. After this, you test me?"
"Not a test, Lan. I spoke plainly, not twisting, and I have done as I said. But at Faldara, I began to wonder if you were still wholly with me." A wariness entered his eyes. "Lan, forgive me. I would not have cracked the walls you hold so hard, but I must know. Why did you do as you did with Rand?"
He blinked. It was obviously not what he expected. She knew what he had thought was coming, and she would not let up now that he was off balance. "You brought him to the Ammerland, speaking and acting as a border lord and a soldier born. It fit, in a way, with what I planned for him, but you and I never spoke of teaching him any of that. Why, Lan?"
"It seemed right. A young wolfhound must meet his first wolf some day,
But if the wolf sees him as a puppy, if he acts the puppy, the wolf will surely kill him. The wolfhound must be a wolfhound in the wolf's eyes even more than in his own if he is to survive. Is that how you see Aes Sedai? The Ammerlin? Me? Wolves out to pull down your young wolfhound? Lan shook his head. You know what he is, Lan. You know what he must become. Must. What I have worked for since the day you and I met, and before. Do you now doubt what I do? No, no, but... He was recovering himself, building his walls again, but they were not rebuilt yet. How many times have you said that Taviran pulled those around them like twigs in a whirlpool? Perhaps I was pulled too. I only know that it felt right. Those farm folk needed someone on their side. Rand did, at least. Moiraine, I believe in what you do, even as now, when I know not half of it. Believe as I believe in you. I have not asked to be released from my bond, nor will I. Whatever your plans for dying and seeing me safely disposed of, I will take great pleasure in keeping you alive and seeing those plans at least go for nothing.
Taviran, Moiraine sighed. Perhaps it was that. Rather than guiding a chip floating down a stream, I am trying to guide a log through rapids. Every time I push at it, it pushes at me, and the log grows larger the farther we go. Yet I must see it through to the end. She gave a little laugh. I will not be unhappy, my old friend, if you manage to put those plans awry. Now, please leave me. I need to be alone to think. He hesitated only a moment before turning for the door. At the last moment, though, she could not let him go without one more question. Do you ever dream of something different, Lan?
All men dream. But I know dreams for dreams. This, he touched his sword hilt, is reality.
The walls were back, as high and hard as ever. For a time after he left, Moiraine leaned back in her chair looking into the fire. She thought of Nynaeve and cracks in a wall. Without trying, without thinking what she was doing, that young woman had put cracks in Lan's walls and seeded the cracks with creepers. Lan thought he was secure, imprisoned in his fortress by fate and his own wishes, but slowly, patiently, the creepers were tearing down the walls to bear the man within. Already he was sharing some of Nynaeve's loyalties. In the beginning he had been indifferent to the Emmonsfield folk, except as people in whom Moiraine had some interest. Nynaeve had changed that, as she had changed Lan. To her surprise, Moiraine felt a flash of jealousy. She had never felt that before, certainly not for any of the women who had thrown their hearts at his feet, or those who had shared his bed. Indeed, she had never thought of him as an object of jealousy, had never thought so of any man. She was married to her battle, as he was married to his. But they had been companions in those battles for so long. He had ridden a horse to death, then run himself nearly to death, carrying her in his arms at the last to Anaya for healing. She had tended his wounds more than once, keeping with her arts a life he had been ready to throw away to save hers. He had always said he was wedded with death. Now a new bride had captured his eyes, though he was blind to it. He thought he still stood strong behind his walls, but Nynaeve had laced bridal flowers in his hair. Would he still find himself able to court death so blithely? Moiraine wondered when he would ask her to release him from his bond, and what she would do when he did. With a grimace, she got to her feet. There were more important matters, far more important. Her eyes ran over the open books and papers crowding the room. So many hints, but no answers. Vandine came in with a teapot and cups on a tray. She was slender and graceful, with a straight back, and the hair gathered neatly at the nape of her neck was almost white. The agelessness of her smooth face was that of long, long years. I would have had Jaime bring this and not disturb you myself, but he's out in the barn practicing with his sword. She made a clucking sound as she pushed a battered manuscript aside to set the tray on the table. Lan being here has him remembering he's more than a gardener and handyman. Guy Dean are so stiff-necked. I thought Lan would still be here. That's why I brought an extra cup. Have you found what you were seeking? I'm not even sure what it is I'm seeking. Moiraine frowned, studying the other woman.
Van Deen was of the green Aja, not brown like her sister, yet the two of them had studied so long together that she knew as much of history as Adelius. "Whatever it is, you don't even seem to know where to look." Van Deen shifted some of the books and manuscripts on the table, shaking her head. "So many subjects. The Trolloc Wars, the Watchers over the Waves, the Legend of the Return, 2 treatises on the Horn of Valir, 3 on Dark Prophecy, and light. Here's Santhra's book on the Forsaken. Nasty, that. As nasty as this on Shadar Logoth. And the Prophecies of the Dragon in 3 translations, and the original. Moiraine, whatever are you after? The prophecies I can understand. We hear some news here, remote as we are. We hear some of what's happening in Ilion. There's even a rumor in the village that someone has already found the horn." She gestured with a manuscript on the horn and coughed in the dust that rose from it. "I discount that, of course. There would be rumors. But what? No. You said you wanted privacy, and I'll give it to you." "Stop a moment," Moiraine said, halting the other Aes Sedai short of the door. "Perhaps you can answer some questions for me." "I will try." Van Deen smiled suddenly. "Adelius claims I should have chosen brown. Ask." She poured 2 cups of tea and handed 1 to Moiraine, then took a chair by the fire. Steam curled over the cups while Moiraine chose her questions carefully. To find the answers and not reveal too much. "The Horn of Valir is not mentioned in the prophecies, but is it linked to the dragon anywhere?" "No, except for the fact that the horn must be found before Tarmon Gaedon, and that the dragon reborn is supposed to fight the last battle, there is no link between them at all." The white-haired woman sipped her tea and waited. "Does anything link the dragon with Toman Head?" Van Deen hesitated. "Yes and no. This is a bone between Adelius and me." Her voice took on a lecturing tone, and for a time she did sound like a brown. "There is a verse in the original that translates literally as 5 ride forth and 4 return. Above the watchers shall he proclaim himself, bannered cross the sky in fire." Well, it goes on. The point is the word Mavron. I say it should be translated not simply as watchers, which is Avron. Mavron has more importance to it. I say it means the watchers over the waves, though they call themselves Domier Avron, of course, not Mavron. Adelius tells me I'm quibbling, but I believe it means the dragon reborn will appear somewhere above Toman Head, in Arad Doman or Saldea. Adelius may think I'm foolish, but I listen to every scrap I hear coming from Saldea these days. Mazrim Time can channel, so I hear, and our sisters haven't managed to corner him yet. If the dragon is reborn and the Horn of Valir found, then the last battle is coming soon. We may never finish our history. She gave a shiver, then abruptly laughed. Odd thing to worry about. I suppose I am becoming more a brown. Horrible thing to contemplate. Ask your next question. "I do not think you need worry about time," Moiraine said absently. "It was a link with Toman Head, however small and tenuous. He will be dealt with as Loghain was. What of Shadar Logoth?" "Shadar Logoth," Van Deen snorted. "In brief, the city was destroyed by its own hate, every living thing except Mordeth, the counselor who began it all, using the tactics of the Dark Friends against the Dark Friends, and he now lies trapped there waiting for a soul to steal. It is not safe to enter, and nothing in the city is safe to touch, but every novice close to being accepted knows as much as that. In full, you will have to stay here a month and listen to Adelius lecture. She has the true knowledge of it. But even I can tell you there's nothing of the dragon in it. That place was dead 100 years before Urien Stonebow rose from the ashes of the Trolloc Wars, and he lies closest to it in history of all the false dragons." Moiraine raised a hand. "I did not speak clearly, and I do not speak of the dragon now, reborn or false. Can you think of any reason why a fade would take something that had come from Shadar Logoth? Not if it knew the thing for what it was. The hate that killed Shadar Logoth was hate they thought to use against the Dark One. It would destroy Shadowspawn as surely as it would those who walk in the light. They rightly fear Shadar Logoth as much as we. And what can you tell me of the Forsaken? You do leap from subject to subject. I can tell you little more than you learned as a novice. No one knows much more of the Nameless than that. Do you expect me to ramble on with what we both learned as girls? For an instant, Moiraine was silent. She did not want to say too much, but Van Deen and Adelius had more knowledge at their fingertips than existed anywhere else but the White Tower, and more complications awaited her there than she cared to deal with now. She let the name slip between her lips as if it were escaping. Lanfear. For once, the other woman sighed, I know not a whit more than I did as a novice. The Daughter of the Night remains as much a mystery as if she truly had cloaked herself in darkness. She paused, peering into her cup, and when she looked up, her eyes were sharp on Moiraine's face. Lanfear was linked to the dragon, to lose Theron Telamon. Moiraine, do you have some clue as to where the dragon will be reborn? Or was reborn? Has he come already? If I did, Moiraine replied levelly, would I be here instead of in the White Tower? The Armorlin knows as much as I, that I swear. Have you received a summons from her? No, and I suppose we would. When the time comes that we must face the dragon reborn, the Armorlin will need every sister, every accepted, every novice who can light a candle unguided. Van Deen's voice lowered, musing. With such power as he will wield, we must overwhelm him before he has a chance to use it against us, before he can go mad and destroy the world. Yet first, we must let him face the Dark One. She laughed mirthlessly at the look on Moiraine's face. I am not a Red. I've studied the prophecies enough to know we dare not gentle him first. If we can gentle him, I know as well as you, as well as any sister who cares to find out, that the seals holding the Dark One in Sheol Ghul are weakening. The Ilianers call the Great Hunt of the Horn. False dragons abound, and two of them, Loghain and now this fellow in Saldaea, able to channel. When was the last time the Reds found two men channeling in less than a year? When did they last find one in 5 years? Not in my lifetime, and I am a good deal older than you. The signs are everywhere. Tarmon Gaedon is coming. The Dark One will break free, and the dragon will be reborn. Her cup rattled as she set it down. I suppose that is why I feared you might have seen some sign of him. He will come, Moiraine said smoothly, and we will do what must be done. If I thought it would do any good, I'd pull Adelius's nose out of her book and set off for the White Tower. But I find I'm glad to be here where I am instead. Perhaps we will have time to finish our history. I hope that you will, sister. Van Deen rose to her feet. Well, I have tasks to be about before bed. If you have no more questions, I will leave you to your studies. But she paused and revealed that however long she had spent with books, she was still of the Green Aja. You should do something about Lan, Moiraine. The man is rumbling inside worse than Dragonmount. Sooner or later he will erupt. I've known enough men to see when one is troubled with a woman. You two have been together a long time. Perhaps he has finally come to see you are a woman as well as Aes Sedai. Lan sees me as what I am, Van Deen. Aes Sedai. And still as a friend, I hope. You blues. Always so ready to save the world that you lose yourselves. After the white-haired Aes Sedai left, Moiraine gathered her cloak and, muttering to herself, went into the garden. There was something in what Van Deen had said that tugged at her mind, but she could not remember what it was. An answer, or a hint to an answer, for a question she had not asked, but she could not bring the question to mind either. The garden was small like the house, but neat, even in moonlight aided by the yellow glow from the cottage windows, with sandy walks between careful beds of flowers. She settled her cloak loosely on her shoulders against the soft coolness of the night. What was the answer, and what was the question? Sand crunched behind her, and she turned, thinking it was Lan. A shadow loomed dimly only a few paces from her, a shadow that appeared to be a too tall man wrapped in his cloak. But the face caught the moon, gaunt-cheeked, pale, with black eyes too big above a puckered, red-lipped mouth. The cloak opened, unfolding into great wings like a bat's. Knowing it was too late, she opened herself to Saidar, but the drug car began to croon, and its soft hum filled her, fragmenting her will. Saidar slipped away. She felt only a vague sadness as she stepped toward the creature, the deep crooning that drew her closer suppressed feeling. White, white hands, like a man's hands but tipped with claws, reached for her, and lips the color of blood curved in a travesty of a smile, bearing sharp teeth. But dimly, so dimly, she knew it would not bite or tear. Fear the drug car's kiss. Once those lips touched her, she would be as good as dead, to be drained of soul, then of life. Whoever found her, even if they came as the drug car let her fall, would find a corpse without a mark, and cold as if dead 2 days. And if they came before she was dead, what they found would be worse, and not really her at all any longer. The croon pulled her within reach of those pale hands, and the drag car's head bent slowly toward her. She felt only the smallest surprise when a sword blade flashed over her shoulder to pierce the drag car's breast, and little more when a second crossed her other shoulder to strike beside the first. Dazed, swaying, she watched as if from a great distance as the creature was pushed back, away from her. Lan came into her view, then Jaime, the gray-haired warder's bony arms holding his blade as straight and true as the younger man's. The dragcar's pale hands bloodied as they tore at the sharp steel, wings buffeting the two men with thunderclaps. Suddenly, wounded and bleeding, it began to croon again, to the warders. With an effort, Moiraine gathered herself. She felt almost as drained as if the thing had managed its kiss. No time to be weak. In an instant, she opened herself to Saidar, and as the power filled her, steeled herself to touch the shadow spawn directly. The two men were too close. Anything else would harm them as well. Even using the one power, she knew she would feel soiled by the drug car. But even as she began, Lan cried out, "Embrace death!" Jaime echoed him firmly. "Embrace death!" And the two men stepped within reach of the drag car's touch, drove home their blades to the hilt. Throwing back its head, the drag car bellowed, a shriek that seemed to pierce Moiraine's head like needles. Even wrapped in Saidar, she could feel it. Like a tree falling, the drag car toppled, one wing knocking Jaime to his knees. Lan sagged as if exhausted. Lanterns hurried from the house, borne by Van Deen and Adelius. "What was that noise?" Adelius demanded. She was almost a mirror image of her sister. "Has Jaime gone and—" The lantern light fell on the drag car. Her voice trailed off. Van Deen took Moiraine's hands. "It did not." She left the question unfinished, as to Moiraine's eyes, a nimbus surrounded her. Feeling strength flowing into her from the other woman, Moiraine wished, not for the first time, that Aes Sedai could do as much for themselves as they could for others. "It did not," she said gratefully. "See to the guiding." Lan looked at her, mouth tight. "If you had not made me so angry I had to go work forms with Jaime, so angry I gave it up to come back to the house." "But I did," she said. "The pattern takes everything into the weaving." Jaime was muttering, but still allowing Van Deen to see to his shoulder. He was all bone and tendon, yet looked as hard as old roots. "How," Adelius demanded, "could any creature of the shadow come so close without us sensing it?" "It was warded," Moiraine said. "Impossible," Adelius snapped. "Only a sister could—" She stopped, and Van Deen turned from Jaime to look at Moiraine. Moiraine said the words none of them wanted to hear. "The Black Aja." Shouts drifted from the village. "Best you hide this," she gestured to the drug car sprawled across a flower bed. "Quickly. They will be coming to ask if you need help, but seeing this will start talk you will not like." "Yes, of course," Adelius said. "Jaime, Go and meet them. Tell them you don't know what made the noise, but all is well here. Slow them down. The gray-haired warder hurried into the night toward the sound of approaching villagers. Adelius turned to study the drag car as if it were a puzzling passage in one of her books. Whether Aes Sedai are involved or not, whatever could have brought it here? Van Deen regarded Moiraine silently.
I fear I must leave you, Moiraine said. Lan, will you ready the horses?
As he left, she said,
I will leave letters with you to be sent on to the White Tower if you will arrange it.
Adelius nodded absently, her attention still on the thing on the ground.
And will you find your answers where you are going? Van Deen asked. I may already have found one I did not know I sought. I only hope I am not too late. I will need pen and parchment. She drew Van Deen toward the house, leaving Adelius to deal with the drug car.